Steve Sosnick joins us now. He's the chief strategist over at Interactive Brokers. Steve, great to have you on this morning. Initial thoughts on what looks, at least from my vantage point, like a pickup here for cyclicals kind of taking the lead on the back of that jobs report.
Yes. Good morning, Miles. I think that we're going to get a little bit of a change in leadership. We're seeing, you know, the futures sort of trying to digest it this morning, but with NASDAQ generally lower, and they've been trading with bonds. We can get into that relationship, but they don't like the higher bond yields. But I think there's a lot for economic bulls to like. Because it turns out the economy strengthening as we were expecting, but the Fed isn't ready to do anything about it yet. So stocks aren't freaking out about it. So you've got a pretty good spot. The psychology right now coming into this, I thought was a bit of heads I win, tails I win anyway, which was if the number was weak, well, that's okay for stocks because the Fed is going to continue to pump money in. And if the number's strong, well, that's good for stocks because the economy is good and they're supposed, you know, that'll help company earnings. The psychology is such that right now the market will pretty much take anything and figure out a way to run with it.
Steve, why is the NASDAQ, why is it under pressure here in the pre-market?
Well, Brian, the reason now is it's actually a strange sort of second order technical thing as much as anything else. Traders have got it in their heads and probably in their algorithms as well, which is if you see bond markets higher, sell NASDAQ. I mean, this is, you know, it's second order, but the logic is that if you have higher bond yields, you're discounting your cash flows at a higher level. So therefore that hurts your valuations. Now, why these NASDAQ stocks actually start to care about valuations at these crazy levels, who knows? It's also partly rotational because there's better things to do with your money theoretically, which would be something like go into XLF when you see the yield curve steepen because there's a more direct relationship between financials and the yield curve. I think that this relationship between bonds and NASDAQ started somewhere late first quarter, mid second quarter, as much correlation as it was causation. But once it gets programmed into traders' mindsets and their algorithms, it becomes causation as much as anything else.
Well, Steve, let's talk a little bit more about what we've seen in earnings season, particularly over the last couple of weeks where we've had, we had some really strong numbers, but they've been followed up by muted, if not outright negative reactions from the market. How are you thinking through just the way that individual companies have kind of been punished during this season? But overall, I mean, we're basically at record highs here. We'll see exactly where we shake out today.
To some extent, Miles, I'm going to say they outkicked the coverage. I think that the analysts, I don't want to pick on them, but they undershot again. It was a tough quarter, probably from their point of view, because the comparisons were so outrageous. And I think in a lot of the biggest stocks, you've had such great momentum that it required perfection. You needed everything to go right for the stocks to react well, because so much had been priced into them. Now, also to be fair, it's not exactly, as you noted, like we're really selling off here. We're flirting with all-time highs on most of the major indices. But to some extent, you know, I think that these things ran a little hot into earnings. Some companies have been punished when they haven't said what the market wanted to hear. But overall, when you step back and look at it, it's been a pretty good quarter. Just some potholes here and there.
Steve, I know you've been watching the overall activity in Robinhood this week. It has been a wild week, to say the very least. What's your take?
Oh, I knew we were going to go there, Brian.
Because why not?
Of course. It was funny because it really did become a meme. The meme came into play and fizzled in more or less record time. Really shouldn't have been a surprise that Robinhood could get the meme stock treatment, because when you think about it, what was the vehicle used to play the meme stock rally by a huge number of investors? Robinhood. So it would fall into play that they could become a meme. I think the most outrageous thing was that it just shows how, because the stock rallied first on the prospect that they were going to be listing options the next day, and then because they listed options on Wednesday, that was absolutely phenomenal. That is the market signaling that they understand this concept of, I'm going to call it the gamma squeeze, you know, where if enough people get on one side of a trade, particularly buying calls, it can actually force the mark, force a stock higher. Without getting into the math, I'm just going to say a lot of ants can move a very big log if you do it. And we saw huge volume, about 80,000 contracts trade in the August 70 calls. Now, the problem with some of these meme stocks are they meet reality in a bad way. And that was, individual investors were dissuaded from selling their, you know, there were disincentives, but not outright prohibitions on them selling their allocations. But meanwhile, there was not a lot of prohibitions against insiders selling. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that came very quickly. I don't blame the insiders, because if the stock is trading, you know, twice where you were willing to sell it a week ago, of course, you're going to want to sell it now. But I think that harsh reality hit very quickly. And so this was, you know, the meme stock trade in a microcosm, you know, up and down. It's pretty wild. And we've seen the stock trading a bit higher this morning, as you just showed. You know, we'll see where it goes. There's a lot of stuff that's got to get resolved. But I think this is the biggest, you know, the greatest, you know, distillation of the meme stock situation that we've seen, all unwinding in about a 3 or 4 day period.
Yeah. And then, you know, Steve, just finally before we let you go, thinking about the broader options structure, which you sort of suggested towards there, has that fundamentally changed? Is there better liquidity, worse liquidity, now that there is this sort of awareness from a new set of investors that the options market itself can create outcomes in the common that perhaps folks had not previously, you know, pros knew this, but the masses are kind of now just getting onto this idea.
Well, you know, the pros didn't really see this very much either. We knew this was a theoretical concept, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, something you saw in practice very often. I think in general, option market liquidity, in terms of liquidity providing by professionals, has been impaired. I don't want to. We could take an hour to go into this and bore everybody. But bottom line is, there's enough liquidity in terms of people on both sides of the trade. I mean, if 80,000 contracts trade, there's a buyer for every seller and vice versa. But I do think that the professionals have realized, basically, when you see this tsunami coming at you, you get out of the way. And, you know, I think that it becomes self-fulfilling, because it's like, if I'm selling calls and I know that it's just unrelenting, I'm going to overhedge. I'm not going to hedge. I'm going to overhedge. And that's going to feed right into that feedback loop that everybody's a part of. And that's why these stocks shoot further and faster. I just think it was crazy that the market is so hip to it, that we were up on Tuesday in advance of options trading and then just leaped higher as soon as the options came on board.
All right. Steve Sosnick, Chief Strategist, Interactive Brokers. Steve, appreciate the time this morning. Have a great rest of the summer. I know we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Miles.